Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and we got a really good sports media roundtable coming up for you. Jimmy Traina, Shad Finn, and AJ Perez. The topics: Jemele Hill leaving SportsCenter 6 and moving to the undefeated. We talk about that. The story that broke today: Patriots quarterback Tom Brady being very distressed by some comments from a WEEI host. And Tom Brady, of course, has a longtime relationship with WEEI. They pay him to go on. We talk about Michigan State and did sports journalism fail when it came to the Larry Nassar story. And finally, Chad and AJ are at the Super Bowl, so we talk about what it's like to be at Super Bowl week, how you approach covering that, and what some of the big stories will be. So it's the Sports Media Roundtable coming up on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. My producer, as always, is Lou Pellegrino. Today is the roundtable as we take this at the start of Super Bowl week, and we have two guests who are in Minneapolis covering the game. They are Chad Finn, the sports media writer and general columnist for the Boston Globe, and AJ Perez, who has essentially the same title for USA Today. The third guest in New York City is Jimmy Traina of SI.com. Before we get into the topics, Chad, let's start with you. First day Super Bowl week as someone who's going to be covering stuff. Are you assigned something today? What is it like? And AJ, I'll ask you the same thing. What's the first day of Super Bowl week like? What are you trying to do?
I just got out here, so it's the shit show of the media night, or what does the NFL Network call it now? Opening night or whatever it is. So you got to go over there and find out if anybody says anything interesting. It's also an opportunity, you know, you get feature assignments ahead of time to kind of get any information you might need on that. But mostly it's just kind of figuring out where everything is. It sounds like I just rolled in today, but it sounds like the media center is right in the middle of the mall. It's sort of like a zoo over there. So it'd be interesting to see what that's like. But if you ever want to see sports writers get mad at yourself, I guess the Mall of America is the place to be this week.
AJ, you are already at the media center in Minneapolis. Give listeners who will not experience ever a Super Bowl media week, what is that like right now? It's usually those facilities are just massive with, you know, there's Radio Row, there's all the writers walking around, there's TV people. It's like one big human centipede of sports media types.
Yeah, this is the first one I've been to that has security in the front. You gotta check your bag, go through a metal detector, and you get your credential today. You kind of chill. You've got a few hours before media night where we get the two teams broken up. And a few years ago, they made this a TV deal, so it's become even more of a zoo.
And Jimmy, what is Lower Manhattan like for you right now? Is it exciting? I mean, is there anything going on there that you wish to tell the listeners about?
Well, listen, I'm not going to lie. I'm a little disappointed with the start of this podcast because I don't understand how you begin by not asking any of us if we've purchased Twitter followers first.
That is funny. We'll get to that. I would like to. I'm almost positive the answer.
You don't want to have guests on here who have bought 400,000 Twitter followers, Richard. You got to, do some due diligence first.
Yeah, I don't think any of us have done that. I mean, listen. There's no doubt that there are people in the sports media business who have done that, and certainly companies have done that. I'd like to still think, though, and Jimmy, I know you've mentioned that when you were at Fox, this happened. Do you think the percentage is under – I'm talking about individuals, not companies. The percentage of sports media individuals who have bought Twitter followers, I'm guessing, is under 15%. You go higher or lower?
I'm sorry, did you say 15 or 50?
15.
That's a good question. It's probably under, but I mean, I was just, the one thing that surprised me was the athletes. I mean, if you're Ray Lewis, you've won a Super Bowl, you've avoided going to jail, you're on TV. Like, do you really need to be buying Twitter followers?
But again, is it Ray Lewis or is it whoever is Ray Lewis's reps or marketing people who are?
I don't believe for one second the individuals didn't know. I mean, yeah, your marketing team can do it. Right, so your marketing team can do it. You log on to your Twitter account one day, and you go from 40,000 followers to 400,000 followers, and you don't say, what the hell is this? Don't do this. Because when you get caught, the embarrassment is extreme, if you ask me.
Well, we'll eventually get back to it. The one surefire way you can have a good sense if people have either purchase followers or sort of part of a bot network is just go to people's followers. And if you start seeing very similar patterns of the type of followers they have, once you get past, like, you know, regular people, verifieds, et cetera, it's not that hard to tell who's purchased or who hasn't. But we'll get back to that a little bit later on. Let us start with what was pretty significant news in the sports media, and that's Jemele Hill's leaving the 6 p.m. SportsCenter edition to join the staff of the Undefeated, as well as other assignments, including town halls and working on OTL, SportsCenter, being part of the Ride Home group. Chad Finn, I want to start with you. This was absolutely not a surprise to me. In October, I wrote that I did not expect Jemele Hill to be part of the SC6 long-term. I actually am still surprised she's at ESPN. I'm still going to bet the latter that she does not make her entire contract. So it didn't really surprise me at all. What were your reactions? And then obviously the question that people have, and my Twitter feed that day was the ultimate shit show, was did she truly ask for it, or was this ESPN? Was this a ESPN PR way to let her get out in front of it because they were going to let her leave the show? She is on the record saying it was my choice. ESPN is on the record with me and others saying it was her choice. I believe her, especially given what I know about her situation. As I wrote in October, they were not happy with the direction of the show, but there will always be people believed that she was forced out. Where do you stand on all of this stuff?
Yeah, the only surprise to me about it was how tied at the hip her and Michael Smith have been through this whole situation, the ups and downs of it, getting the show together, the promotion that ESPN put into that show when it was SB6 when it first came out, and how dedicated they were to it, at least up until the point where there started to be blowback on Jemele's Twitter comments, and then it kind of got hazy there for a while. But I felt like her and Michael were really determined to make that work right up until, well, up until she talked to you and up until the podcast with you, where it became clearer that she may have had higher aspirations or different aspirations than being a SportsCenter anchor for a long time. It is her roots. She's an accomplished writer and a fine reporter too. But I think there's probably going to be a discrepancy in the paycheck there that I wonder about. And, I'm curious whether she's making SportsCenter money to do Undefeated level work right now.
It's a fair question. I would think they'll renegotiate that, but I usually don't renegotiate in terms of taking a salary cut. So my guess is that you renegotiate where you get enough dates on air where the salary remains the same, and you try to, as opposed to the dates that you would be on for SportsCenter every day, you somehow make it up by doing all this other stuff. AJ, basically, I'll take your top line thoughts on this from where you sat in terms of Hill walking away from SC6 and everything that has essentially happened to her over the course of the last calendar year.
Yeah, I think listening to your podcast, you could kind of read between the lines where she wanted kind of more freedom to say what she wanted to say. And going to the Undefeated, obviously, is they cover race and topics that where she can comment, and her popping up on other shows, I think this will give her more freedom to say it. I think it was her decision. I heard the same thing, the same line out of ESPN, and we have her statement. I tend to believe that this was her call, and I think and good luck to whoever's in the reformat, that 6 o'clock Sports Center, which is it's been sliding since Zarniak. Once she left, it's been sliding, and it was sliding before her. So.
Yeah, we'll get to Jimmy. I mean, Jimmy, I guess you had a very funny line to me that, at least the one good thing here is that no one's going to ask you about SC6 ratings again, which I thought was really funny. They still might.
Yeah, I mean.
But I was just going to go on.
Crazy how they were only concerned for that short period of time when they were the host.
Well, one thing that was...
I wonder what it could have been.
The one thing that was interesting to me was, and listen, Jemele Hill and Michael Smith were down 15% from the year before. I don't think anybody who's covered the sports media would have predicted otherwise. So, there's a lot of people out there who are like, her show tanked, et cetera. Yeah, the ratings weren't good, but as anyone in the space has said, as AJ just said, that show is dead zone. It's over. So I asked Douglas Pucci of Awful Announcing and Programming Insider just because I was curious about this. I'm like, okay, Hill and Smith are down 15% year over year from January. What was the percentage drop from the previous January when it was Zarniak and then some other people who were filling in when she went on maternity leave? What was it over the year over year? 16.2%. So the point is that slot, as AJ just said, is going down. It doesn't matter who the hosts are. Obviously, with Jemele Hill, you had all the other stuff with her tweets on Trump that pissed off a lot of people, et cetera. Jimmy, same question that I asked AJ and Chad. How did you sort of see this this major move? You know, arguably the most visible person at ESPN stepping down from their biggest brand.
I wrote in October on SI.com that I didn't think, or maybe it was August, that she would be the host of that. They would be that she would be the host of that show through the end of the year. So I was off by a month. I was not surprised at all. I think after the Trump thing happened, this is the warning, the suspension. It was clear that she was not a fit for that show, and that show wasn't a fit for her. I believe the story that she wanted out. I think if it was a firing, they both would have gotten the axe, not one. They were tied at the hip from day one. And I know everything has to be a conspiracy these days, and, you know, God forbid you actually look at facts, which you just gave us, but I don't think it's really this big mystery. I think she decided that wasn't the fit for her. And, you know, as you get deeper and deeper into what's going on with the White House, she's going to want to comment more and more. And if you're tied to that franchise and what's happened has already happened, you're not going to have the leeway you might have if you're doing other stuff. So, and here's the other thing, too, for people who want to say she was fired. She still has a three-year contract there. So she's not fired. Like, she's still part of the company. So I know no one wants to listen to that, but and you got a lot of heat for actually just reporting the facts, but that's what they are.
Chad, one thing on Michael Smith, since you've known him for a long time, he used to work at your paper. They have said that the Michael Smith Sports Center is going to be more of a traditional sports center, whatever that means, and that he's going to be a solo host for the time being. That's interesting. So, you know, he leaves Jemele, who's his close friend, and they basically had this show that they envisioned. That show gets blown up and changed before Jemele walks. Now it's Michael Smith hosting a solo sports center, which is going to be very much a traditional highlights, you know, old school sports center. Where do you think Michael Smith goes in the next year? You think, is it realistic for us to think that 1 year from now, the sports center at 6 o'clock will still be Michael Smith solo hosting it, what ESPN executives want, which is basically your nuts and bolts sports center?
Man, I don't know. I mean, you look at the way this sort of evolved into them getting this sports center. It came off his and hers, and their great chemistry on their podcast and the obvious friendship that they had. And I don't think individually either one of them would have been looked at as a sports center host, no matter how much they were revamping things. I don't know what a normal, regular sports center is at this point, because they've turned it into many different things. You get the Van Pelt version, the LA late night version, Michael and Jemele were. I don't see that as Michael's strength. I think Michael's strength is bouncing ideas off somebody else and having a back and forth. I mean, he was hired there as an NFL writer. He's evolved into this role as an on-air personality. And I think he's an on-air personality who plays really well with others and is really good at the back and forth and the give and take in those conversations. And he's going to have people on there with him. And I just don't see him being a conventional sports center host. I think it does change pretty significantly down the road here for all involved.
Yeah, if you go by the people who respond to Richard, the whole country now is going to watch the 6 p.m. Sports Center. Everyone was very concerned about it, and now they're all going to tune in, supposedly. Everyone tuned out, supposedly, because of Jemele, so maybe, you know, ratings now go through the roof. Right.
1.5 million people watching. Here we go. What's interesting, AJ, you can jump in too, but I think you hit it on the head, Chad. Michael Smith, if you remember in his early days, he's hired as an NFL reporter, but then he quickly switches and moves into like the around the horn kind of rotation where, you know, you're a panelist on this stuff where you can give your opinion. He does, he's hosting like Numbers Never Lie, which again gives him a lot of opportunity to offer his opinion initially about the merging of statistics and sports. And then Numbers Never Lie essentially just became like a pseudo debate show. So I'm with you. All his sort of experience, and I think he's good at it, is sort of being in a format where he can counterpunch or he could go back and forth with somebody. And that's not what the SportsCenter, that's not what the executives who are now running SportsCenter envision. So that's just one to watch. The other thing for Michael Smith is I think it's in a tough spot. I think he's in a tough spot because, again, there is nothing that's going to happen that's going to raise those viewership numbers. And now he's heading into February and March, which are deadly non-NFL months.
Yeah.
And I would expect the viewership to be down.
Yeah, I think both Hill and Smith made a great transition from writers to being on our personalities. And I think we're going to see them pop up now for the next couple of years on various shows. And they can still write. They're still great writers as well. I think the ESPN is going to give them a platform.
Jimmy, one last one with you on Jemele Hill. Do you think if she's off SportsCenter, do you think the how do I sort of phrase this? Does the social media heat and the heat that's on her, especially from those on the who really disliked her Trump comments, do you think that recedes at all? Or anytime,
no,
you know, I agree with you. Anytime we see her on Around the Horn, anytime we see her on Outside the Lines, anytime we see her on some ESPN programming, it just that same. Those who dislike her, it just shifts to that. You would agree?
Absolutely, without a doubt.
All right, go ahead.
And she's going to be a presence on social media. It's also just going to keep going.
Again, it's interesting to watch. We'll see. We'll see how ESPN plays that. I've said it ad infinitum. I thought their response during all the Trump tweets were pretty weak. John Skipper never mentioned her by name in terms of basically saying nobody dictates at our company, who's on the air, who's not. He didn't do that. Sort of gave you the masterclass in corporate BS, and here we are today. Again, that's just my opinion. I realize people will disagree. I want to move before we get to something that Chad will be covering a lot, a Tom Brady story first day. Let's get to the XFL, and I'll start with you, Jimmy. Vince McMahon comes out with a press conference about the restart of a new XFL. He announces some things, the number of teams, when he wants, ideally, to play. Doesn't announce anything in terms of the specifics on a media partner, and doesn't really announce that many specifics in terms of how this league is actually going to come to fruition. That said, because it's Vince McMahon, so much attention about this. There's a lot of talk out there about that. Vince McMahon is trying to sort of preach this, anti-NFL kind of, no criminal people, no guys with criminal records, no politics in the game, shorter game, etc. You were on that conference call. What did you make of what McMahon had to say, and where do you stand in terms of whether this league is eventually ever going to see people playing in it?
I didn't think it was a good day for Vince at all. Had a press conference and had no information. No information on the cities where the teams will play. No information on broadcast partners. Said he'd like it to start end of January, early February, but, no definitive date there. The one thing he said, the two things he said, there'll be no crossover WWE and XFL. Last time they had Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler calling games. The Rock was doing promos at halftime, so there'll be none of that. So that was a nugget. And he made that statement that players with criminal records, DUIs, wouldn't be allowed in the league. And then by the end of the day, he had backtracked on that. So I thought it was not a good day for Vince. I don't believe he's starting this league to cater to, Trump people and people all up in arms because of a few players who kneeled. You're not going to spend $100 million and have this project for that. I think Vince, like Trump, has an ego and a narcissism to him and can't handle the fact that his league failed the first time, and he wants to sort of try to redeem himself. I think that's what this is all about. I don't think it has a chance to succeed.
AJ,
Jimmy,
go ahead. Finish
one thing. The one plus is, when it happened the first time, we didn't hear about former NFL players who might want to be in the league or use it. Tommy Maddox is the only sort of sort of recognized name that was in it. This year, there was a little bit of it. This time around, there's a little bit of difference. People want Manziel in the league. People think Kaepernick could be in the league. There were players on, you know, Jared Lorenzen. So maybe there's a little more interest if you get names like that. But I think, you know, I think you're going to have a hard time getting people to watch an inferior product.
AJ, same thing. And if you want to, both you and Chad, if you want to sort of even forge it to, if either of you guys happen to think this is going to come to fruition, I'd be curious as to what you think the media play might be for Vince in terms of where it airs.
Yeah, I covered this thing back in 2001. Back when they used to practice on Long Beach, the LA team. I can see it being one year failure. I don't know how this league's going to survive multi-year. Especially without, you know, last time they had NBC money, at least, and NBC right. backing. I don't see a network getting involved in this, getting involved in Vince. They lost in 1 year. They lost about $70 million. It's gonna take a lot more than that now. That was 2001 money, and I don't see I don't know what talent they're gonna pull. Second, it's like, you know, they're gonna make it a safer game. Well, the whole appeal, the first version of the XFL was. No fair catch. You know, right. These players, you know, the first, I wrote about the first commercial they had, a guy getting hit with a wrecking ball, trying to, you know, on a punter kickoff. You know, this, I don't see how they're going to get the talent. I just don't know if it's going to be a safer game than the NFL, which is, you know, they have, you know, concussion protocols and they do what they can. I'm just obviously lapses with that. I don't see how it's going to be so different from the NFL than. So I don't, which is so established, and you know, I don't really see how this is going to work.
Chad, I'll go to you. And AJ hit on something that was pretty interesting. There's a very big difference in what McMahon was sort of even, and Jimmy's correct. The details were very scant, but McMahon is kind of selling a brand of football very different than 2001. You know, the XFL was about loud, brash cheerleaders, sex. If you remember, some of those commercials were like, wasn't Vince at one point in 2001 like kind of playing around with the idea, look at the football players hanging out with the cheerleaders in the locker room, and it was a lot of like double yeah. entendre and sex, and now he's flipped it. Like basically no, you know, nobody with a criminal record in the league, you know, social any kind of social activism is out. We're going to make this game faster. It's interesting. It's a totally different sell job for 2018.
It is in a lot of ways too. I can't think of where it would belong on television. I mean, Fox or Fox Sports 1 would make sense stylistically if they weren't so involved with the NFL. Wouldn't their contract run through 2022, something like that?
Right.
I can't see them being involved. And I look at some secondary type of men's channel. I don't think that's what Vince is looking for. I don't know how this works because you hear his name and. It's going to be associated with WWE and the things that he's done. And yet his approach to it is sort of the opposite of that. Nothing he is pitching right now is going to generate any kind of buzz unless a guy like Manziel or Tebow is in the league. The ultimate McMahon heel turn on this would be if he panders to Trump's base and then goes out and signs Kaepernick in week one or something like that. But right now it seems like something that other than Vince's name being attached to it, there's no other reason for it to generate any sort of interest, even as we get closer, if we do get closer to it becoming a reality.
Yeah, and I actually...
One interesting thing to piggyback on what Chad said is if I'm not mistaken, the contracts for Monday Night Raw and SmackDown on the USA Network are up, I think, in the summer of 2019. So the thought's out there that they're going to bundle that with the XFL. And, you know, there's been rumors that Fox is going to buy the WWE. I don't know what the deal is there. But they can go to a network. Maybe it's FS1. They say, okay, you want Raw and SmackDown on, you know, Monday and Tuesday nights? You also have to take the XFL. So that they do have that leverage. But I don't know what networks are going to pony up money for all that.
It's interesting. We'll
this
see.
Day and age.
Yeah, we'll see if that's somehow is connected. I am very much a skeptic of this league. Eventually playing, and even let's say it plays, I would bet the under on 2 years. It seems at least at this point very very suspect that we're going to see stuff. But you know, $100 million is a lot of money, and that's a good start. And and we'll see where that goes. I want to move to a story that broke today, and it's right in Chad Finn's neck of the woods, and obviously AJ is going to cover this too because he's in Minneapolis, and that's Tom Brady, who has a weekly spot. Chad, if I'm wrong about any of this, just correct me. Obviously, this is your market and your story. Tom Brady has a weekly spot on WEEI Radio. That's one of the two big sports radio stations in Boston. He's had a spot there for many, many years. The interesting thing about that is that's an exclusive spot. So they're always getting Brady every week, and Tom Brady basically makes news just by just talking. And so it's a great, really, it's a really big perk. And he has obviously paid for this, but it's a major perk for that radio station in that they can make national news because they have this exclusive contract with Tom Brady, who comes on after the games to talk about what happened on the game. So today, Tom Brady on January 29th comes on this show and says that he's not sure what his relationship with this show, the Kirk and Callahan show, which I've been on and done their podcast, is going to be heading forward because there's a WEEI personality, Alex Reimer, who on another show took a shot at Brady's daughter. I don't remember the exact phraseology, Chad, but it was like, what did he say exactly? Like an annoying...
The most important word was pissant.
Okay,
yeah.
Like an annoying
pissant. Annoying pissant.
Right, so that obviously gets back to Brady. Not surprising, he can't say anything anymore on any public airways. It's not, especially a big station like that, that's not going to get back. And so Brady, he basically doesn't do his spot, his full spot today. He says he's not sure when he's coming back. Alex Reimer's been suspended for that comment. And now I take it to you, Chad. This is like fascinating to me in that it's an example of the leverage that somebody like Tom Brady really has when it comes to these local radio agreements. And I just find it fascinating just how quickly WEEI has reacted. And now what do they do when it comes to, like, is it possible they could get Brady back? I mean, that's an invaluable chip for them. So I'm just curious about your take on this whole story because it's a story that broke today, and it's going to be a national story. It's not just a Boston story.
Yeah, you know, I was flying out here today when all this was going on, but I made a few calls this morning, and sounds like they were WEI was completely blindsided that Brady did that, that he went on the air and made a little statement about all his time on the show and how angry he was, and then essentially hung up. It was very, very short, almost, I don't know if it was scripted or not. Didn't really sound that way, but you could see how maybe he had a couple ideas written out. But yeah, it's just as you said, Richard. Alex Reimer's career basically is up to the whim of Tom Brady right now. If Reimer I should clarify, he's a part of a rotating group of co-hosts they have on that show. It's Kirk Minahan, Jerry Callahan are the regulars, and then there are three or four that come in as the third voice, and Alex is one of them. And he's had an interesting career. He's only 24 years old. When he's 12 years old, he was on The Tonight Show. He was like a Graham Bensinger type, sort of a prodigy as a sports kid who really wanted to be in sports media. And he paved his own path, didn't get a lot of traction at certain points, and then kind of caught on with this WEI show. And this show is, you know it well, it's cantankerous and goes right up to the line sometimes and has a lot of edge. People know what Kirk said about Aaron Andrews in the past and some of the other things that they've had to deal with. And what happens with guys like Alex or other hosts even is they try to fit in. They try to appease what works on that show. Their ratings are great. They have enormous ratings. What they do, whether you like it or not, it works. And so they have a young guy like Alex on who's trying to do what they do and have the success that they have and trying to fit in with that group and keep getting reps with them. And unlike the veteran guys, I think he didn't recognize where the line is, what you can say and what you can't say. And you cannot call 5-year-old daughter of anybody, let alone Tom Brady, a pissant without having it backfire on you. So in that sense, he's getting what he deserved. But I kind of sympathize to a very small degree with the mistake that he made.
Yeah, I appreciate. We're going to go to you, AJ, because I'm interested in the national.
I got a good story on this one.
Yeah, yeah. The one thing, Chad, that I guess surprises me, and again, this is Monday morning quarterbacking by me, but I think if you're in the heat of the moment and you say that, I'm just surprised that we haven't seen like a gigantic social media apology from him, because that would be the one, the saving, not a saving grace, I say, but that's the one, I think, proactive move that you could take to say, hey, I totally screwed up. I apologize to Tom Brady, his family. I've also reached out to the Patriots to let Tom Brady know. Like, to me, that's like, you do that 101, and even though you're going to have so many people still in the New England area really, really disliking what you did, I feel like that at least gives you a modicum of control after your initial mistake. But I haven't even seen that yet. The more the news cycle plays out without hearing from somebody, I think it makes it extremely tough for him to return to the Boston Airwaves. AJ, I'll move to you. You work for USA Today. Is this already something your bosses want written about?
No. Well, I'm going to go back a little further. I made a mistake in a story about a little over a year ago, and I was actually Tom Brady's and it was his weekly hit on WEEI, and I cut a part of a quote off and kind of changed the context of a quote. It was my mistake. I was transcribing online. It was a quick story, and we corrected it really quickly, probably within 10-15 minutes. Once I realized my error, and my editor and I got to the editor, and I was like, I messed this up, and we corrected it. And I was getting killed online for because we don't delete tweets. I can't delete a tweet. My USA Today can't delete a tweet. That's our policy. So the old tweet hung out there, but with the quote that kind of mischaracterized what Brady said, and I got killed, Reimer invites me on, and he wants to talk the next day, and I'm like, oh, it's my mistake, I'll own it, so I went on, and they're hammering me. It's probably 7 a.m. I was barely woke up. They're hammering me, and I'm like, yeah, it's a mistake. They tried to play it out like I was some left wing radical that I was trying to. It was a Trump quote about Brady, and it was like, it was, and the White House, and that's what it was. He's killing me. And it was like, he was going, and I guess he went through my timeline on Twitter, and I have, I'm for equal rights, and I like some gay rights activists, and I have friends, a lot of friends who are gay, and I like their posts and, retweet once in a while. And he basically tried to out me, which is hilarious, on there. And I'm like half asleep. I'm like, wow, you're trying to out me. I'm like, okay. Not in the closet, so I'm not. I don't talk about any of that stuff anyway.
Wow.
So I was like, are you kidding me? In 2017, you're doing this, and I'm like, I was like, oh, whatever. So he sent me a note, like an apologize. I don't know if he got any heat for it. I didn't make an issue out of it. I accepted the apology, but it was kind of like, it's so, I don't talk about any of that stuff online, and I really, it was amazing to me that he went there. Not shouldn't be, I guess, knowing what he's all about and what that show's all about. But he's had no response so far to this, and I'm kind of shocked.
Chad, did you hear that? Have you heard that from AJ before? Had you heard that story?
No, I never heard that. I didn't know anything about that story.
Yeah. I didn't make an issue out of it, and it was like,
Wow, Jimmy, you are somebody obviously who you follow New York sports radio probably about as close as anybody I know. So, both of us, given that we live here, we've seen a lot of nonsense on the New York sports talk and a lot of fights and, famous Francesa, et cetera, et cetera. But I think Chad hit it. And there just are places that even in the heat of whatever rant you're doing, and I'm not saying Reimer was ranting here, but just, even in the heat of whatever take you have, there are just some places you can't go, and kids are the place. It's sort of the same rule of thumb with, the kids of the president of the United States are off limits, whether it's Barron Trump or Malia Obama. You can't go to some places. And I feel like that's where, in this case, he has no chance to win in the court of public opinion, because you went to a kid. Brady's fair game to me, but his kids are not. I don't know how much you've read about this, Jimmy, or seen it, but what were your initial thoughts?
No, I know all about it. When my initial thought was, because the quote came out last week, and obviously it was a very minor story last week, and then it became the story today when Brady did what he did.
Right.
When I saw the quote, I said to myself, you can't say that in this day and age. I don't want to sit here and say I know for a fact. I could swear I've heard in the old Mike and the Mad Dog days them saying about, someone's dopey kid or, something like that. But it's a different time. It's a different time, and they did it to the wrong player.
That's agreed, yeah.
If you're doing this to, the backup linebacker, I'm not sure it's
Well, hold on. That's interesting. Jimmy, hold on for a second. I want to go to Chad. Chad, I think Jimmy makes a great point. Listen, I understand Tom Brady's royalty in New England. You can't. There are certain guys you can't touch. Brady, you know, Bobby Orr, Poppy. So let's say it's not Brady, and let's say it's the left tackle of the Pats or a backup offensive lineman. Is this story what it is today, or is it because it's Tom Brady? That's for you, Chad.
Probably, definitely not to that degree. I mean, everything that is going on with this, with WEI, is in desperation to make sure Tom Brady does not stop coming on the air with them. If it's the Adrian Waddle or whoever their backup tackle is, and this happens to, and he gets mad and makes some sort of statement about it, it blows over in a day,
right?
If it lasts a day, but with Brady, it's no shock that it's at the degree it is. And we also have to remember, this is not the first time somebody's referenced one of Brady's kids. Dave Portnoy at Barstool.
That's right.
Got in a bunch of trouble for it was a picture of his, I think his 5-year-old at the time, son, nude at the beach and commenting on what he looked like. So Brady's probably pretty sick of this to a very major degree at this point. The interesting thing is that this happened last week, and WEI didn't do anything until Brady reacted. I think that tells you what their priority is right now.
Well, that's interesting.
Right, and I mean, what if an EEI host says that about the kid of an Eagles player? You think anyone cares in Boston?
No chance. No, it's not a story.
No,
not in Boston.
Right,
I mean,
it's because
I do think people in Philadelphia though would go off on the host. The thing is, I don't know if the radio station would suspend Reimer if he said that about an Eagles player. In fact, I'm sure they would not, would be my guess.
I'm just fascinated. I mean, the stupidest thing on Reimer's part is that, he didn't think at the time that his station has a contract with Brady, and, you might want to not say that about the guy. If he's saying that about another Patriots player who doesn't go on EEI every week, again, I'll tell you what fascinates me more. This is a whole separate issue, and I don't know if you even want to get into it, but I'd love to hear Chad. Like, it blows my mind that Tom Brady does a weekly spot on WEEI. Like, what does he get out of that? I would love to know what they're paying him. Like, it blows my mind that the best player in the game bothers to go on the radio every week. Like, he doesn't need that at all.
Right, he's done it for years, too, and there's been a lot of controversy with it in the past where he's gone to WEI management and complained about this or that or a question that he was asked. So it's something that's annoyed him for a long time. But the way, at least last I knew, and this contract was just renewed a week or two ago, but the last I knew it was all a package deal. So what WEI gets is Brady in the morning. They get Belichick an afternoon drive, and they get various boring interviews with the rest of the roster over the course of Monday and Friday afternoons. And they're paying for Brady, and they're paying for Belichick. And from what I've heard, it's a seven-figure deal. Those are the two things they want. And they're not the flagship. So this is what they have. 98.5, the Sports Hub, is the flagship up here. Has the games, gets a huge boost in its ratings in the fall because of the numbers they get on Sundays and how that carries over the week. WEI needs this, and I'm as mystified as you are why Brady does it. Clearly, he doesn't need the money. His wife makes more money than he does, but for some reason, he's continued to do it for years and years and years. He's done it as long as I can remember, and he's been here, 17 seasons?
It's fascinating.
Yeah, well, it does give him an opportunity to talk to the public in a different forum. But yeah, I mean, and listen, money's money. It's not heavy lifting, and it's still a lot of money. The reason why Chad just, and this is not just Chad, but for all you guys, the reason why I don't think anything would have happened to a Boston sports host had they said the exact same thing about any other player's kid who didn't play for the Pats, is we go back to what that, I think it was Michael Felger, right? The Boston sports host said about Roy Halladay. And he was not suspended, yeah. Chad. Am I correct about that?
He was suspended from his television gig at NBC Sport.
Okay. So
Boston, but that was more for him saying Dale Earnhardt Jr., he roots for the wall in car accident.
Okay, so right. But so the large... But,
it's part of the same rant.
Yeah, so the point is that, like, had that been a Red Sox as opposed to somebody who played for the Jays and and other teams, it would have been different. That's sort of where the double standard comes in. Let's stick with baseball. And Jimmy, I'll stick with you because I know you don't like this guy. But Alex Rodriguez was just brought in by ESPN as part of a unique job share with Fox.
And I can answer your question right now. The ratings will not go up at all. No, it's not going to make a little bit of difference.
That's not my question, Jimmy. Stop producing the show.
I was trying to get you through a question without 5 minutes passing.
Don't worry about it. Again, don't produce the show. So Rodriguez joins Matt Vasgersian and coming over from Fox and the MLB Network, and they join Jessica Mendoza in a new booth. My question is not if I think the ratings are going to go up, but what do you think of that booth as a listenable enterprise? Vasgersian, play-by-play, A-Rod, analyst, and Jessica Mendoza, analyst.
I like Vasgersian a lot. I really don't have an opinion on Jessica Mendoza. I think she's fine. I don't think she's great. I don't think she's terrible. And I just have this personal thing with A-Rod, so I can't be objective about it. But I know all of the ridiculously embarrassing things he did throughout his career. So I'm not really buying the whole renaissance in his as a media entity. And here's the thing that gets so overblown about that. He did like the 9-minute video with Pete Rose about hitting that went viral, but it's not like anyone else, it's not like people can remember all these things Alex Rodriguez has done as a member of the media. And he also, by the way, has very little experience doing games, so who knows if that's a fit for him. But yeah, I just like the wisdom of A-Rod, I don't really care on Sunday nights, to be honest with you.
AJ, your initial thoughts when you saw that Rodriguez and Vasgersian had headed to ESPN?
I like this. I mean, I'm also a fan of Matt. But I think before Romo, there was A-Rod. There was like he made this seamless transition from athlete to host. But that was basically a host in a pregame show. It's gonna be totally different now, having to talk for three and a half hours and analyze games as they happen in front of them. I think that's gonna be a challenge, and I'm sure they're doing they're going to do homework, get the three together for a bunch of, tests. But I'm not sure how it's going to work out, but it's a splashy choice for sure.
Chad, given we cover this on a daily basis, I have to be honest, I was stunned. I put out there that I thought it was going to definitely be Ravage or Schiambi. Totally turned out to be wrong on that. They were negotiating with Vasgersian for a while. I do wonder if this was a little bit of a plus one deal. They want A-Rod, A-Rod's guys, Vasgersian, they both come. Not to knock Matt Vasgersian, certainly a talented broadcaster. But I didn't see this. I have to be honest. I would have thought they would have stayed in-house for the play-by-play. And then obviously I didn't see any kind of A-Rod heading over to ESPN. What were your reactions when this sort of broke that day and they revamped the Sunday Night Baseball booth massively?
It's probably all a ploy to keep Vasgersian from going back to doing XFL games, right? That's the first time I ever heard of him was when he was when he had the show with the trivia show of Lisa Guerrero, whenever that was. But yeah, I didn't see that coming either. I thought it was going to be Ravage, and Boog would have been my choice. Ravage, I like in the studio role a little bit less as a play-by-play guy, but I figured it would be one of those two guys, and that's what you heard. And maybe A-Rod had some leverage in this. My first reaction to all of it was that it was the job share sort of thing between Fox and ESPN was interesting. But then, you dig back a little bit into history, and Joe Morgan worked for like every station, every network at once back in the 80s and 90s when the baseball network was going on and Sunday Night Baseball was debuting in 1990, and this isn't unprecedented with A-Rod, but I guess it's pretty significant for the time that he's so well respected. Respected at both places that they agreed to make it work out for both entities and serve him with what he probably wanted.
Chad, I want to stay with you. Alex Rodriguez has clearly, whether he will say this sort of outright or not, He's used broadcasting to help reformulate and reshape his image. And he's certainly done a great job in the broadcasting booth. I find him very interesting to listen to. And he has, in the last couple of years, I think, won some people over after years and years of lying. What is interesting to me is if he does have a long relationship with ESPN, that could run into the Hall of Fame debate whenever he is on the ballot. And I'll be fascinated to watch how, like, the outside the lines and baseball journalists cover a guy who is employed by that network, because there is no turning back history. Alex Rodriguez repeatedly lied and lied and lied about his performance-enhancing usage, including multiple times to ESPN and one famous interview that made Peter Gammons look really, really bad. So what do you think if that comes about? Do you think A-Rod gets the Olay treatment from ESPN because he's now an ESPNer, or will there be the same kind of tough treatment that A-Rod would get if he wasn't working for ESPN?
What has he got, three years before he's on the ballot?
I think Jimmy might know. I think it's three, but I'm not sure.
Yeah,
They cut him at the end of the year 2 seasons ago, so he probably has three more.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, with all of these guys, whether it's A-Rod or Bonds and Clemens or Manny Ramirez, who I think got 22% of the vote, even though he has all the accolades you'd want for the Hall of Fame, what's going to have to happen is no rehab of the image or no whitewashing what's happened in the past. What's going to have to happen is somebody in the Hall of Fame is going to have to get busted as a PED guy. We know they're there. We all have our suspicions about who they are. It's probably a lot more than fans want to believe, considering that a good chunk of players from the 90s and the 2000s are in there now, and there's a bigger group even going in this year. I think somehow, and I don't know how it happens, but there needs to be a revelation that a guy who is revered as a non-steroid guy gets busted or gets exposed, and then all of a sudden everything is in chaos even more than it is now. I think that's the only way that guys like A-Rod are going to get in and guys like Manny Ramirez get in, because people are so staunch in keeping all the PED guys out. We know A-Rod was one. We know Manny was one because they got busted after testing.
All right, let's finish up with these two topics, and AJ, I'll stick with you. The coverage of the Larry Nassar trial out of Michigan, those victim statements were, while incredibly courageous, and many times really hard to listen to, and just the level of, the levels that. How do I sort of phrase this? I mean, we're talking about a significant and serial monster in Larry Nassar. I think the coverage of the hearing for his sentencing and the testimony from the victim statements has been very, very good. I don't think, though, that the coverage before that on this USA Gymnastics scandal was very good, and I put Sports Illustrated, obviously, in that box of not doing enough. You work for a national place like I do, AJ, and like Jimmy does. From your vantage point, what happened? What did sports journalists outside of the Indy Star and the Lansing State Journal and some of the other people in the Michigan area, did we just drop the ball?
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I think it should have gotten more coverage. This, I'm proud to be part of. My chain was part of. Kind of broke this. Gannett owns the Indy Star and also Lansing and Free Press. I think a lot of us thought, like, when this first came out, when Nassar's name was first attached to it, right before the Olympics in Rio, a lot of people thought it was going to blow up then. But it wasn't really until Simone Biles came out, obviously was convicted for the child porn charges late last year. And so that got some coverage. But then once Biles and all these others came out, even before the big impact statements in court, which lasted several days, and I think that kind of got the ball rolling, and it was televised, and a lot of people, reacted to it. And it's just the numbers, 140, 150, 150 plus, people came forward over almost 20 years, about 20 years between Michigan State what he did as a team doctor I don't know. It just seems like it was kind of it kind of got the ball once the names got attached. I think that really kind of got people's ire, and it should, and how now that Congress and everybody else wanting to figure out why Michigan State, all these people with the summer game movement and didn't stop this. And I think that's a good thing.
Chad, I got to be honest. I understand where AJ's coming from, and obviously the Indy Star is part of the Gannett chain, and they cannot get enough credit here. But the coverage of this, in my opinion, up until the last couple of weeks, has been poor. And I don't know if it's because Olympic sports get pushed to the side in non-Olympic years, and we don't have as many reporters covering Olympic sports as we do the NFL. I don't know if there's any kind of sexism involved in that it was a women's sports story at one point versus men, but it took a long time for this thing to get to the national conversation. And I mean, this is, bigger scandal than Penn State, which is a monster scandal and rightly covered the way it was. But what's your thought on that? You obviously work for a paper in Boston that has an incredible tradition of breaking stories of massive, massive weight. Anybody who's seen the movie Spotlight knows that. But to me, I don't know, Chad. I feel like there was a lot of missed opportunity here. I mean, missed opportunity is not the right word, but I feel like journalism didn't get it done until the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad, but sometimes that happens. Even in a story that eventually gets broken, if you saw Spotlight, like you referenced, the Globe had a little bit of what was going on with the Catholic Church years before and didn't follow up, didn't dig deeper. And part of that was just the culture of the Catholic Church in Boston and the power that it had. I don't know what the culture was at Michigan State, but we got a pretty good idea right now in terms of we're starting to get more and more information on it anyway about what's gone on in other athletic programs there, what people in power knew and what they did say, and more important, what they didn't say about what they knew. I think we're going to find out a lot more about what's gone on with the U.S. gymnastics program and what exactly went on at Michigan State for all of these years. Good reporters are on it now. Excellent reporters are on it now. Maybe it took too long. Maybe some people missed some things, but I think it all comes out at this point. And you're absolutely right. I mean, I saw people like Dan Wetzel writing about it weeks ago that this hasn't gained the traction for whatever reason. I don't understand either, but I feel like it finally did, and it finally came to the head that it should have in the first place.
Jimmy, I'll just sort of move because it's within the same university, and that's all the attention now from some brilliant reporting, I thought, by Outside the Lines on Michigan State basketball and Michigan State football and the allegations that the athletic department looked the other way on allegations of rape and assault. And we've now seen, and the footage is really, if you're sort of someone who like follows and covers the media, it's very, very fascinating to watch the aggressive reporting from ESPN questioning Tom Izzo, and Tom Izzo essentially not answering anything. Now, I have no doubt he's probably been couched by lawyers not to, but that is stuff that you never see at a press conference. Most press conferences, especially locally, are, even if it gets tense, it's like tense about like stuff that happens in a game. But anybody who saw the last press conference that Izzo had, where Tisha Thompson of Outside the Lines was really grilling Izzo, and Izzo wasn't answering anything, it was very compelling to watch, and kudos to her. What do you think, Jimmy, from your sort of end when you've seen this? It's you don't often see coaches at the level of Tom Izzo under the microscope like that publicly.
Well, because you really don't see them in regards to a story like this. You're seeing them after a win or a loss.
Right.
And obviously this is something that's just unfathomable. And I don't have much to add about it, but I will say this just from following it briefly. This is just starting, I think, for Michigan State.
Agreed.
I mean, yeah. I think we saw
there's going to be a lot of people going down.
Hold on one second. AJ, go ahead.
Yeah, I think we saw from The Athletic. They reported last week that right after the ESPN reported, it was a day later, maybe later in the
Nicole,
day.
Nicole Arbach,
that,
yep.
That, yeah, Nicole, yeah, my former coworker. She broke down. She followed it up with, that they knew about this. The NCAA knew about this, and President said he'd look into it, and we don't know. It doesn't look like he ever. It didn't follow up, at least appropriately. It looks like. you know, so that's, so that, you know, this is not going to, this is going to go on for a while. I think it's going to be, you know, I'm not, how it's going to go is people losing their jobs, but I think it's going to be, we're going to see some people, you know, losing their jobs because of this.
I am with Jimmy that I believe this is just the start. Paula Laverne, by the way, I hope I'm pronouncing her name right, but she's the guest on the next episode of Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, which will tape this Thursday. So hopefully as you're listening to this, if you're interested in that. But she broke the major story that ESPN did on Michigan State, where just basically it's a revelation of the athletic department essentially enabling a culture of sexual assault inside the men's basketball and football programs. Obviously, we'll use the word allegations there. But, Chad, just finishing up on this, I don't know how Tom Izzo is going to survive this, but, and here's my big caveat, when you talk about these coaches at that kind of level, you know, the levels where they are bigger than the university, and probably Izzo is in some ways bigger than the university, maybe everybody around him goes down and not him. But this is, if you read that ESPN story and the amount of reporting that they did and their ability to get documents that that Michigan State was forced to give up from FOIA requests, it's pretty, in my opinion, damning of Michigan State University and the athletic department.
Yeah, I've been kind of waiting, and I hope it doesn't come, but I imagine it will, for the NCAA coaches cultists in the media that put the and I don't want to really name names, but you know who they are, the biggest name coaches in the sport are virtually untouchable.
Yep.
And there's a lot of
I like the guy, but I call it the vitalization of college basketball coaches, because that's what we generally get on, not on the ESPN investigative side, but on the ESPN game telecast side. Too often it's Ricky Pitino's the best, Tom Izzo. We've been getting that for years.
Yeah, we're going to get the Izzo is a great molder of young men thing here from somebody, whether it's Vital or somebody else. But there's a culture around that sport that seems even more extensive than it is around other male sports, where coaches are revered by the people who ostensibly cover them. And I've been waiting for that on Izzo, and I think it's going to come, but I don't think he survives this. I think Jimmy's absolutely right that there's going to be a lot more about this. People are on the trail, and it already seems like it. That trail leads right back to him right now. So he's an iconic coach and somebody who's really revered by the people who cover him. He's a good back patter, but I'd be shocked if Tom Izzo is the coach of Michigan State for much longer.
All right, let's finish up with this, and I'll start with Jimmy, and then we'll lead into the two guys who are at the Super Bowl this week. Jimmy, is there anything interesting to you from an outsider perspective about the Super Bowl Media Week? Do you watch Media Day, or maybe it's Media Night now?
So,
so you think basically that it's all overkill and not interesting?
I mean, listen. Maybe at the media. What is it called? Is it called Media Day?
Media Night.
The team.
Well, yeah. What is it? What are, do you
Opening
guys know? What's called Opening Night. Now it's called.
Maybe you get one or two crazy moments that are amusing, but I mean, the rest of the week. I mean, Radio Row is. You know, I'd rather be in Guantanamo than Radio Row. I mean,
wow.
It's just the same 20 players pitching. You know. Tide and, you know, erection pills and all this stuff on every radio show in the country.
You think Jerry Rice will be on Radio Row, Jimmy? What do you want to put the odds on that?
Well, I'll give you the perfect example. Our old colleague Maggie Gray tweeted out today their lineup for her show on WFAN in New York, and one of the guests was Andre Tippett, former Patriot. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, another show, I don't know, whatever show, I forgot, another show, another city, tweets out their guest list, Andre Tippett. Is the United States of America yearning to hear Andre Tippett all across the land? I mean, you know, so it's horrible. It's a horrible week for any NFL fan. And, you know, Sunday's over. Last Sunday was way better than this coming Sunday, even for that day as well. You know, 8-hour pregame show and, you know, nothing but nonsense. But, you know, it's part of Americana, I guess.
Well, Jimmy taking a shot at the AFC's Lawrence Taylor there, Chad. He's taking a big shot at Andre Tippett there. All right, we'll stick with you, AJ. You know, don't get discouraged by Jimmy knocking what you're about to do for the whole week. But so how do you approach, you know, for the listeners out there who would be interested in terms of how, like, a writer approaches Super Bowl Media Week, like, do you get assignments? Like, do you have all your assignments already? Do you get it on a day-to-day basis? What is your charter over the next 6-7 days?
A couple of days ago, my editor sent out it, kind of what we're all working on, and we all gave input. And then pretty much daily we get kind of, especially today, we get kind of the same players. I got Brady tonight. Two of us are going to be on Brady tonight, Dan Walken as well. So we're just kind of, I'll be turning around whatever he says. Obviously, the Reimer thing is going to be probably one of the first questions. Yeah. And then you've got the circus. You know, you got those people, the people here who cover football once a year, and they're going to ask oddball questions. And you know, that's you know, or people dressed up as somebody, you know, in a costume. You get that, which is annoying. And we're just trying to you know, do our jobs as reporters, as you know, for my outlet, it's different from a lot of the others. So it's hard getting something new. Everybody's like at a podium, and everybody, and there's transcripts, and you're not going to break a lot of news, but you're just kind of trying to cover the entire event as best you can.
Jimmy, did you want to say something? It seemed like you had something to say.
It's you can sort of predict what's going to happen. I mean, you have, you know, every reporter is going to try to ask Brady about Trump. It's all about getting the quote. It's all about getting the quote that can get on Twitter and get all the likes and retweets. So, you know, ask Brady about his friendship with Trump. You know, ask Gronk about, you know, the number 69 and his love of it. I mean, you can predict what everyone's going to be asked. It's not like, everyone knows the quote, the soundbite they need to get on Twitter. So it's just a big, you know, cluster.
Chad, it's a little different for you, obviously, because obviously as a staffer at the Globe, people can't get enough of what is going to go on for Super Bowl week. Are you specifically assigned to media-related stories, or do you have additional assignments outside of whatever media stuff you're going to do?
It's about a split. Yeah, I got to write a regular weekly media column and then, basically do what you did in written form with Gaudelli and Eskoff the other day about how they go about doing how they go about producing the Super Bowl, that sort of thing. The media aspect of the Super Bowl and the various personalities involved. But yeah, I have a couple Patriots related features to do as well. It's saturation coverage here for us once again. So
one last one for both of you guys, because again, I think just especially younger people who want to cover this stuff one day, I think I'll find it interesting. But AJ, how do you with hundreds and hundreds, maybe it's even thousands of media people, like how do you approach trying to do something that isn't going to be repeated by another media person?
Yeah, that's kind of a hard. It's kind of actually my character, Josh Peter, and I have the same kind of approach to these things. We just try to find things that you know that they're out of the ordinary, not too quirky, but something that's newsworthy. You know, during the World Series, for example, I covered that. I'm not a baseball beat writer, but I covered the guy jumping into the bullpen, and I wanted that story because that's something that doesn't happen very often, and especially when a bullpen coach kind of subdues the guy who jumped in. So it's stuff like that where, you know, there's so much game coverage, that's not my forte anyway. So it's just finding the stories that are finding angles, and it's hard, but there's so many people here, and there may be one other person that has the same angle as you, but it's just finding the stories that most outlets would report because they're all about game coverage, or they don't have the resources. We have several reporters here, not as much as Chad does, but we have enough to kind of fan out and look for stories that aren't going to be in the transcript and a quote that aren't going to be asked a million times today.
All right, we will end with this. We'll get some predictions for the Super Bowl. Jimmy, do you know what you should know this off the top of your head. Do you know what the spread is right now?
I do, but there's a topic I want to discuss,
right,
and I'm getting
ahead. Nervous
you might not get
it.
All right,
yeah, because I'm about to end it, so be quick.
All right, I want to know how you feel and the other guys. Do you think it's a little strange or a little bizarre that ESPN would have, and I like her. This is not a knock on her. It's really ESPN. But you have a very, very well-respected NBA reporter in Ramona Shelburne. And they used her to put out a WWE press release last night. Do you not find that strange?
I would say this. Ramona is very tight with Ronda Rousey.
Yeah,
and she did a long.
She can be as tight as she can be sisters with her. The WWE gave them that story
for sure. No one would argue that. Or Rousey gave it to Ramona. I think that's right, that's a case of Ramona's very tight with Ronda, gets this opportunity, and then you got to decide what's the line between the news value of Rousey joining the WWE, which is huge news value, versus you're doing the PR for the WWE. But I feel like ESPN. I love Ramona, and I think she's a great journalist. So this is not to knock her at all.
This is not about Ramona, because if Ramona wasn't tight with Ronda Rousey, WWE would have gave that story to Arash.
Right. The point,
the story to ESPN.
What I'm trying to say, Jimmy, is, and then AJ and Chad can go. It's not the Jimmy Traynor show. Calm down. ESPN's made its bones when it comes to WWE. They're a promotional vehicle for WWE. They're not covering them journalistically like Meltzer or like our guy Justin Barrasso or David Bixban does a great job.
Well, they don't cover
them,
but they don't. You're using the wrong term. They don't cover them. They're partners with them.
No, they cover them, but I mean, anyway. All right, let's. AJ, do you have any thoughts on this?
No, I worked with her back in LA. I was a coworker with her in the same chamber with her. I've covered MMA, and she was Ben Rousey's go-to person for a long time, and she's broken a lot of stuff, and I didn't have a big problem with it at all. I mean, you kind of figure it's Shelburne's going to break a story with Ronda a couple times a year, so I wasn't very surprised. I'm one of the people. I'm kind of old school that way. I just don't think WWE is a sport. ESPN's a partner with them, and I don't know how you can cover it. It's like covering a soap.
But that's sort of my whole point.
It's more of an entertainment.
I don't want this to come across as a knock on Ramona. I'm not knocking her, but my point is, she had that story. She had that story long before Rousey showed up at the event. There was a deal between WWE and ESPN to post it after Rousey showed up to the event. They had it all written on their website. It was all done already hours before. My point is, if I'm ESPN, wouldn't you want to protect one of your top NBA reporters and not have such a bad look for them? That's my point.
I understand that, but Jimmy, but here's the thing. I don't want us to be hypocrites here. We had LeBron James going to the Cavs probably a day or two before we actually published it, and you hold it and you try to figure out what the best timing is. I mean, I think ESPN has just made its bones in that they are promotional partners with ESPN, and then, you know, Ramona's just got to live with the fallout from the MMA community who have criticized Ramona for being too tight with Ronda, and then from those who will say it's more PR than not. At the same time, it's a great get in that you beat people on the news, and that's going to get a lot of traffic for your site.
Yeah, but see, that's my point. I don't think it's a great get because they would have gotten that anyway. Even if Ramona had no relationship with Rousey, WWE is going to give ESPN that story. They're in bed together.
Maybe or not. I don't know. Chad, do you want to weigh in on this?
No, I just thought it was interesting. Helwani tweeted out that Ramona was there and
yes,
up in the front row.
Great job by him.
Sent that out as a clue. I thought that was a really savvy way of doing that.
Do you want to know the best part of all that was there was a great photo somebody took of Rousey being interviewed by, I think, Ramona for some kind of ESPN, like SportsCenter type thing, and then Triple H is around the corner taking a photo of Rousey, and so he's sort of in the corner of the shot. And Jimmy, did you happen to see that photo? It's crazy.
I did see the photo, yes, I did.
All right, is there anything – I mean, I was going to get – it feels like anticlimactic now to ask you guys who you're going to win, but I guess I'll do it. All right, Jimmy, who wins between the Eagles and Pats and why?
I want the Eagles to win, but I think the Patriots will win.
Okay. Do they cover or no?
The line's down to 4, I believe. Oh. It was 5.5. I think it's down to 4. So I will say they cover.
Okay.
I don't really have a ton of confidence in that.
Fair enough. AJ, who do you like?
Yeah, same Pete. Yeah, the Pats will win, and they'll probably cover.
Chad?
I'm going to go old school in terms of how the Patriots have won these things, and say Patriots by 3, just like their first 3 Super Bowls, including the third one they won against the Eagles. Yeah, Philadelphia is good, and I hope the Patriots, Patriots fans recognize that, because the Patriots certainly do. They know they're in for a game.
The real question for Chad is, if the Patriots lost, are Brady and Belichick both back next year 100%? Obviously, Brady is now that they got rid of Garoppolo, but is in Boston, is there anything about Bill maybe hanging it up, or he's still going to keep going no matter what?
Now, his contract terms are such a mystery because I don't think they want the per-year value out there because it would throw everything out of whack. But he's got a couple of years left, and nobody, including people close to him, think he's going to break that at any time. So if he ever leaves, or when he leaves, it'll probably be when his contract is up, and that's not coming up soon.
Is everybody still mad at Seth Wickersham in Boston, Chad, or have you guys gotten over that?
Yeah.
I mean,
the small things that the Patriots turned into semantic games in there, and Seth's never going to hear the end of them. So.
If the Patriots win, I feel like Seth Wickersham should get a ring. Don't you think so? For his part in bringing that franchise together. Chad, last one.
Sure.
Last one quick, because, again, I can't get enough Boston stuff. Did you watch the two Bills, the upcoming 30 for 30 doc? Which
I did watch the two Bills.
I thought it was awesome.
No spoilers.
I just want to know what he thought of it. We're not going to spoil it. It's really
fantastic, and it's worth it just to see Belichick with a mustache in the 80s.
Exactly. All right, AJ, is there anything you want to promote before you get out of here? Do you have a book to promote or a clothing line or something? You have all these other businesses.
I can't really promote my personal training business.
I love. I'm happy to do it.
But I don't buy followers, so if you want to follow me, it's BYAJ Perez.
All right, nice. All right, I like that. Personal training, we could all use that. All right, Jimmy Traina is SportsIllustrated.com's top media writer, and you can follow his work on Traina Thoughts. And what's your podcast name, Jimmy, again?
Off the Board.
Off the Board. AJ Perez is USA Today's fine. I mean, I call you sports media writer, AJ, but you also do other stuff. He's a general columnist as well, a general assignment reporter. Catch him on USA Today as well as on Twitter. Chad Finn, guest on this podcast many, many times. He is the sports media writer for the Boston Globe as well as a general columnist for Boston.com. Chad and AJ, have a great time in Minneapolis. Good city. I hope you guys have fun. I hope the weather's, generally speaking, decent for you guys.
It'll be minus 13 on Friday.
Oh,
I don't know.
Jesus.
Oh, God.
That is, stay inside, please. But listen to some Prince, if you can. Just get into the spirit. All right, Jimmy, Chad, and AJ, thank you very much for joining us on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. We will certainly have you all back again very soon. All right, back in the studio with Lou Pellegrino. My thanks to Jimmy Traina, AJ Perez, and Chad Finn for coming on the weekly roundtable. Check those guys out. Their work from Minneapolis, they'll certainly be working hard. It's a fun, really fun assignment to do Super Bowl week, but it's also a lot of work. And I know the other guys will be grinding. Previous podcasts right before this one, Fred Gadelli and Drew Esikoff of NBC Sports, they are directing and producing the Super Bowl. Had a long interview with Jim Nantz that's gotten some great feedback and some terrific downloads. So thanks for that. I really enjoyed that conversation. Katie Nolan was the guest on January 11th, and Jamel Hill, who we spoke about on this podcast, if you are interested, on January 4th. We had a long, in-depth conversation. And as those guys said, not really surprising, I think she sort of telegraphed that things were going to change for her at ESPN. That's a 63-minute conversation on January 4th, if you're interested. All right, for everybody at Cadence 13, especially Lou Pellegrino, for Sports Illustrated, this is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network? Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.